This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. The Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this week for another 60 minutes of old-time radio. We'll hear first this time from Dunninger the Mentalist, this episode featuring guest Raymond Edward Johnson from July 26, 1944. After that, it's The Mysterious Traveler and his story from March 14, 1951, The Knives of Death.
Here's the Chemtone Hour with Dunninger the Master Mentalist. Chemtone's the miracle wall finish that paints an average room for only $2.98. Goes on living rooms, dining rooms, bedrooms, playrooms, walls, and ceilings like magic. Goes right over wallpaper, paint, or wallboard. Mixes with water, dries in an hour, washes easily. And here's your Chemtone host, a man who catches up on his reading by telling what's on your mind, Dunninger.
Thank you, Glenn. Indulging in a little light summer reading, I get the impression from someone in the audience who's concentrating his or her mind upon a name. The name begins with an M. I get the name Mellini. Where does it come from, please? Mellini. That comes from the lady about the, well, about the 20th row, center of the auditorium. My dear lady, we never met before, is that correct?
No, indeed, we've never met
The
before.
Reason that Mellini comes to your mind tonight is because you have seen him years ago do a somewhat similar demonstration
of
thought reading, is that correct?
Yes.
You're asking me to tell you where you saw this demonstration, is that right?
Yes.
That is what you're thinking about.
That is what I'm thinking of.
Are you thinking of a place in New Orleans? No.
No.
Are you thinking of... Wait now, it isn't New Orleans?
No, it's new, but it's not Orleans.
It is new. Are you thinking of Wellington?
Yes, New Zealand.
New Zealand. Wellington, New Zealand. Thank you very much. That is about 90% accurate, and now I receive the initials J-M. M-A-N-D-V-I-L-L or something like that. A U-I-L-L, where does it come from, please? Who identifies that name? The initial J. Whose thought is that? Won't you kindly raise your hand rapidly? Jane, I believe it is. And the last name, Mandville. That comes from you, madam? Is that correct? The lady about the... seems to come from your direction. I'm not very, very certain. This person is thinking of California. There's the lady on the right side of the studio about the 35th or 36th row. Now, that is your thought, madam?
That was the middle name that you gave.
Oh, only the middle name. Mm-hmm. You were thinking of that name, however.
Yes, but as
very
a middle
well.
Name.
See if I can give you the rest
name.
Of it. You want the full name?
I want the full name.
Would it be Flint?
Right.
Is this person residing in California?
Right.
In Los Angeles?
Near.
West Los Angeles.
That's correct.
Yes, and the exact address, would that be Manning Avenue?
Right.
2314.
That's right.
I thank you.
Dunninger will demonstrate in more detail what's on your mind in just a moment. Right now, let's turn out the lights, get into that eerie mood, and meet our four judges of the evening. First, coming out of the inner sanctum, your inner sanctum host, Raymond, who actually is Raymond Edward Johnson. And the prominent author of the mystery X Marks the Dot and handwriting expert of the New York Sunday Mirror magazine, Miss Muriel Stafford. At Miss Stafford's right is Ellery Queen's lovely secretary, Nikki, who in real life is Marion Chocolate. And judge number four is the sensational new singing star, Dick Brown.
Thank you, Glenn. Later, I shall try to solve the mental mystery our four judges have created just for this occasion. Right now, I get an impression of someone in the audience that is saying to me, "Where am I from?" And it's concentrating very definitely upon the city of Chicago. Where does that come from? Where am I from? And thinking I am from Chicago. Where does that thought come from, please? That comes to the lady about the 45th row. The young man is running up to her with a mic in order to get her verification to whether or not I'm correct.
Yes.
Is that your thought? Is that right?
Yes,
would you kindly reply?
Yes.
I'm correct, madam.
I am from Chicago.
You are? That's what you were thinking about?
Yeah.
Is there anyone near you that's thinking of what seems to be a phone number? I get Glenmore. That comes from a lady upon the other side of the studio about the 12th row. Is that your own phone number, young lady?
That's right.
Glenmore.
Yes.
You simply ask the questions mentally, what is my phone number? And you're thinking of Glenmore, too? Would that be 2684?
My goodness.
Thank you. Someone is thinking of money. I receive the impression, it seems to be rather a large sum. The question is, where can I get about $10,000? I come to the gentleman way down below. Just raise your hand high, sir. My dear friend, you let me know and I'll split it with you. I would I have the answer to that one. Who among you is thinking of a certain date? Is thinking of the month of March? I get the 26th day of March. Where does it come from, please? That comes to the gentleman about the 25th or 26th row, right side of the studio. Is that an event of importance to you, sir?
Yes, it's my birthday.
Your own birthday?
Yeah.
You were born in the year 1905, is that right?
Right.
I thank you very much. And now I receive the impression of someone thinking of the initials MP, the name Margot Pierce. Where does it come from, Pete? The lady about the last row, or very close to it, about 50 rows up the studio. Is that your thought, young lady?
Yes.
Have we ever met before?
No.
Am I correct in stating that you were juggling your thoughts between a piece of jewelry or money that you have in your purse or a name of someone in your family? Have you a daughter?
Yeah, the name.
Her name is Marguerite.
Mm-hmm.
Her age is 12?
Yes.
This piece of money you have in your possession, is that a Jewish gold piece?
Yes.
That is correct.
Yes.
Now, you seem to be an exceptional subject, and once again the question, we have never met before, is that correct?
No.
Your question as you walked into the studio before you got here was this. I wonder, could Dellinger tell me where I was born, is that right?
Yes.
But you didn't ask it, you didn't write it, is that correct? Am I right, madam?
Yes.
You did not write this information,
No. Nor
the question.
No.
You concentrated upon the money instead. Am I correct in stating that you were born, think very hard, please. Would that be Antwerp?
Yes.
In Europe?
Yes.
But you lived in North Carolina?
Yes.
Would we say Durham, North Carolina.
Yes. Right.
I thank you very much. And now the initials DCH. Does that make sense to anyone? DCH. I get Major. That comes to the lady on the right side of the studio. Madam, you want, I take it, you would like me to give you the full name of the initials you have in mind?
Yes, I would.
You want the full name? You've made a notation of the initials, but the name is known to you alone.
Yes.
Would that be Donald C. Hyman?
Right.
Would that number be a serial number of his?
Yes.
Is that all right, Mr. Weiss? Can I give the lady the number? All right. I ask that only so as not to disclose any vital information. War information, which of course must not be disclosed. But George Weiss thinks it's all right. Madam, are you thinking of the numbers 0331863?
That's correct.
I thank you very much. And now I receive an impression of someone saying, is my position permanent? Where does it come from, please? Lady about the 12th row. My dear lady, I'm no fortune teller. I don't know. But I would like to state that no position is permanent. We only hold a position as long as we choose to concentrate upon our wares and do them successfully. The impression which comes to me now is something about where... No, I get two sets of numbers. The first set, 3047. Where does that come from, please? 3047. Who thought? The lady about the 35th row, right side of the studio. She walked down to the lady, please, at the mic. Do you mind standing for a moment, madam? Or just whispering into the mic as to whether I'm right or wrong. That is your thought?
Yes.
But isn't it true that you were trying to make up your mind whether you would concentrate upon that one set of numbers or another very different?
That's right.
And the number that you weren't concentrating upon, but had in your mind subconsciously, seems to be 6467. Is that correct?
That's right.
I thank you very much. Who is thinking of the digits? 2316. 2316. An address. I get Aldridge. Does that make sense to anyone? The lady right to the right about the 17th or 18th row. Is that your thought, young lady?
Yes.
Is that your own address?
It was.
It was your address. Your last address. Am I correct on the 2316?
2216.
Oh, 2216. Well, that's fairly close, isn't it? Would that be Aldridge Avenue South?
Right.
I thank you. Who among you was thinking of what seems to be, well, I get the word Saturday and 1846. Does that make sense to anyone? Does that make sense to anyone? That comes from the lady about the 35th or 36th row.
It was Saturday, but 1946.
Is that an event of some sort?
Well, yes.
Is it a ball game?
No.
No. Well, it's a contest, isn't it?
No, it's something I'm hoping for.
You're hoping for it?
Yes.
Well, has it anything to do with an appearance upon a studio show?
No, it hasn't.
Were you thinking of Lucky Strike?
Yes.
I don't know whether that's on our network or not, but I get it from the lady's thought. I get what seems to be Hollins.
Yes.
And Lucky Strike, and then the Saturday, and the date.
Yes.
Well, that about possibly makes sense to you, but I was successful, of course, of getting the impression. Thank you very much indeed for aiding me. Now someone is saying, I have lost a sum of money. Will I find it? Who saw it, please? Someone lost some money and wants to know, will they find it? Well, that is the gentleman's idea. My dear friend, I wish I knew. If money could think, I'd try and locate it for you. But since it doesn't think, I can only get the thought from you. And I can only tell you that, well, it's gone as far as I'm concerned, but the amount seems to be $10. Is that correct?
That's right, that's right.
That is right. I thank you very much.
As a charter member of the Inner Sanctum, Raymond, have you any comments so far?
This is all very well, Mr. Riggs, but when does the mayhem begin, huh?
Well, I believe you and our other judges have taken care of that, Raymond, and the mystery story you've asked me to solve later on.
We dare you to solve it, Mr. Dunninger.
I see. Miss Jaffer, but no man could refuse a dare from so attractive a thought.
Well, now I warn you, Mr. Dunninger, Ellery Queen's listening in.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I'll try not to disappoint him, Nicky.
I see Dick Brown looking very mystified, so, Dunninger, how about one more demonstration with me as the subject?
That's no test at all, Glenn. Everybody knows what's on your mind. You start. My mind was blank.
Amazing, Dunninger. Absolutely amazing. And so is Chemtone. Hey, are you pulling my leg? My mind was a blank on home decorating until I heard of Chemtone, the miracle wall finish. Today, I live in a dream house. And only yesterday, I lived in a mess. Chemtone changed the living room, the dining room, and the bedrooms overnight. Chemtone went right over our faded living room wallpaper, our rough surface dining room walls and ceilings, our painted and unpainted bedrooms like magic. And it cost us only $2.98 a room to use Chemtone, the miracle wall finish.
Glenn, did you write that?
Oh, no, sir, Dunninger. That's what thousands of listeners write about Chemtone. As a lieutenant in the Army Air Force, our singing star, Dick Brown, flew small, unarmed reconnaissance planes over Jap-held territory in the South Pacific. He had many a close shave, and one of them was a little too close. Sent back home to recuperate, he's returning to his original career of singing. Chemtone is proud as well as pleased, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce, through the courtesy of his sponsors, the Form Fit Company, Dick Brown.
I'm just a fellow on a furlough, out looking for a dream. The one who's in my dreams every night. A lonesome fellow on a furlough, in search of company, somebody who will be my guiding light. Oh, pretty lady, you'll hear me say, beautiful lady, are you going my way? I'm just a fellow on a furlough, have all come true. The girl of my furlough dream is you. Oh, pretty lady, you'll hear me say, beautiful lady, are you going my way? I'm just a fellow on a furlough, whose hopes have all come true. The girl of my furlough dream is you.
Thank you, Dick Brown. That was swell. Raymond, since murder is the specialty of the Inner Sanctum, will you give Dunninger the background of the mystery story our judges have concocted for Dunninger to solve?
Oh, yes, certainly. As you've gathered, Dunninger, this is a sort of capsule murder mystery.
Mm-hmm, I understand, Raymond.
And the victim's name is, I forgot, Old Jones.
Sounds eerie.
Yes, his partner finds Jones has been embezzling from him. Jones is going to be killed. And your job is to tell us who did it.
All right. Who hates Mr. Jones besides the Hawk?
Oh, everybody who knows him, Mr. Dunninger. Years ago, this man, Jones, sent an innocent man to prison. The man has served his sentence and is eager for revenge.
Mm-hmm. This fellow Jones is a downright menace, Miss Stafford.
Well, oh, yes. But when you hear what Ellery Queen's secretary has to say about him, it's even worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nikki?
Well, Mr. Jones also has a very lovely daughter. We'll call her Nancy. Now, Nancy has fallen in love and wants to be married.
Mm-hmm, but her father says no. Is that it?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And they have violent quarrels.
So the partner, the ex-convict, and the daughter. They all hate Jones enough to do something desperate.
And then what happened?
Dick Brown will tell you that.
Well, Mr. Jones has a birthday. His daughter Nancy arranges a surprise party for him, and all the people you've just heard about are there.
Oh, here comes Father now. Happy birthday, Father.
Huh? What's the meaning of this, Nancy?
Why, I've invited some of your friends to surprise you.
Well, you can just unsurprise me then. Get out, all of you.
Now, look here, Jones. I thought this would be a good occasion to straighten out our partnership problem.
There is no problem. You accuse me of embezzling. I defy you to prove it.
Careful, Jones. I ran across an account book today.
Bosh. I'll claim it's a forgery.
Ah, yes, a forgery. You lied about that before, didn't you, Jones?
Eh? Who are you?
Don't let my pale skin and white hair disturb your memory, Jones.
Pale skin, white. Why, you're...
Yes. The man you railroaded. And this is the day of reckoning I've waited for.
You dare to come to my house, you jailbird? Get out, all of you, get out.
Not so fast, Father. I want you to meet the man you've always refused to meet. The man I'm going to marry. Father, this is...
No, Nancy. I've said my last word on the subject of your marriage.
Well, I haven't. And let me tell you...
Not now. Later, perhaps. When these unwelcome visitors have gone.
No, you don't, Jones. We're not leaving until...
Hey, he's got a gun.
Yes, and I know how to use it. Now, will you get out or do I have to...
The light. Who put the lights out?
Well, Dunninger, you're on your own. There were the partner, the ex-convict, the daughter, Nancy, and her fiancé. Which of them killed Mr. Jones?
Is that all I have to do, Glenn?
That's all, Dunninger.
Just figure that out. Well, a word or two to my judges. Might I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, if it isn't true that quite a distance from this studio this afternoon, you among yourselves decided upon a possible solution to the mystery. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right.
The solution is one upon which you all have, well, agreed, may we state.
Correct.
Right. I see. I haven't any way of knowing what solution you were for. And since I have no desire to guess at the possible answer, I'm relying entirely upon your cooperation to mentally project the answer that you yourselves have chosen. Is that agreed upon and understood fully?
Right.
Now, will you be kind enough, therefore, to compose a sentence in your mind and word by word, in unison, project that sentence to me, and I will make an effort to completely and correctly, I trust, analyze your thoughts. Word for word, please. I receive this impression. The fiancé who is the convict's son killed Jones to avenge his father. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is that 100% correct?
Yes.
Well, you certainly took care of the mayhem department, Raymond. What do you think now?
I think Dunninger is really great. Anytime you get tired of reading thoughts, Dunninger, drop into the inner sanctum and read a few tombstones of me, huh?
Thank you, Raymond. Miss Stafford?
Oh, I'm baffled. I can tell all about a person from his or her handwriting, and I do. Thousands of letters a week. But graphology has definite rules. Mr. Dunninger seems to be a law unto himself. Baffling is a word for him.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
I still don't see why Dunninger called his book What's on Your Mind. He always seems to know.
That's about right. What about you, Nikki?
Well, just don't be surprised if I advise Ellery Queen to send for Dunninger the next time we're back.
Well, thank you very much, Nikki.
Well, thank you, Nikki, and Muriel Stafford, and Dick Brown, and Raymond Johnson for appearing as our judges tonight. And a pleasure to be tested by minds as keen as yours. I'm not certain whether George Weiss would like me to do this or not, but I have an impression that our friend Nikki here has been concentrating upon something in her possession since she came to the studio tonight. And if I'm inaccurate, which I hope I am not, she had a series of snapshots in her purse. Is that correct? Does that mean anything to you?
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
Is there one in particular that you were, well, sort of juggling about in your mentality to see whether or not you could project to me?
Yes.
There is one in particular?
Yes.
Isn't that one
I'm very fond of.
One that you're very fond of?
That's right.
Would that be a picture of a youngster?
That's right.
A baby in the nude, lying upon its stomach, so to speak.
That's right.
With its head turned to the right. And its left foot up in the air.
Sort of, yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Now, that is the impression as you have mentally composed it. And that is more or less in accordance with the impression that I received. Is that right?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Yes.
Well, so much for that. I have an impression that comes from someone in the audience that is more or less disappointed in not having been able to reach me. It comes from the lady, let me say, about 22, 23 rows down. I seem to sense an impression that you kindly walk down with the mic. When you get down to the proper point, I'll stop you. That's the idea. Correct. Right about there and turn to your left. Would you be asking me for, well, you were concentrating upon the fact that you're here tonight on someone else's pass. Is that correct? Someone else's ticket, is that right?
That's right.
And isn't it true that upon your way to the studio, you were thinking about asking me a question that you afterward decided not to ask?
That's right.
The answer, to my mind, the point of common sense, is no. Thanks a lot for helping.
Here's a story that certainly isn't a mystery tale. You all have heard about the 50,000 Frenchmen who can't be wrong, but even these Frenchmen aren't as right as the 50,000 dealers who sell Chemtone, the miracle wall finish. And if you want to do yourself a right good turn, go to one of these dealers tomorrow and bring home a lovely new room. So that's what a gallon can of colorful Chemtone contains. Be sure that you get the one and only genuine Chemtone, the miracle wall finish. Next week, Chemtone will dedicate our program to the United States Coast Guard. Our judges will be
Rear Admiral L.C. Cobble, commanding officer of the Manhattan Beach Training Station.
Commander Jack Dempsey, also of Manhattan Beach Training Station.
The Coast Guard Director of Public Relations, Captain Ellis Reed Hill.
Mary Small, the well-known singing star.
Now, here's Dunninger to say,
of course, there is another lady in the audience that I can't possibly disappoint. It seems to be the young lady, 2, 4, fifth row, second seat in. I think that is about right. Am I accurate in stating, young lady, that you were considering a change and wondered whether I could give you an answer to that thought?
Yes.
Is that correct? I'm not a fortune teller. I don't know whether a person should or should not change, even to the point of so slight a question as yours. It isn't anything to worry about, but the initial is D, and stick to it. You get the point?
Yes.
That's not advice I'm giving you. Again, it's just a hunch that I think would work out to your absolute satisfaction. Thanks a lot for helping. The Office of War Information has asked me to tell you about the urgent and immediate need for cadet nurses. If you are a high school graduate between the ages of 17 and 35, apply for the all-expense scholarship now available. Contribute to victory. Prepare for a professional future. Write to the United States Cadet Nurse Corps, Box 88, New York City. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you.
And this is Glenn Riggs adding a pleasant good night for the makers of Chemtone and its 50,000 dealers throughout the country. Try Chemtone. No muss, no fuss, no bother with Chemtone, the miracle wall finish. This is the Blue Network.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler. Written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Coben. And starring two of radio's foremost actresses, Gladys Thornton and Abby Lewis, in The Knives of Death. This is the mysterious traveler inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join two little old ladies who have one burning ambition in life. They want to solve a murder. It's a story I call The Knives of Death. Perhaps you remember two sweet old ladies named Grace and Florence Murdoch. Grace is 72 and Florence is younger. She's only 70. After a lifetime in a small town, they've set out to see the world. Well, up to now, their only recreation has been reading mystery stories. Now they're determined to find real adventure and not just read about it. In their hotel room high above New York, Grace Murdoch is looking out at the great city below them with eager anticipation.
New York, Florence, think about it. We're in New York.
I don't have to think about it, Grace. I know we're in New York.
Oh, look at the lights. The enormous buildings, the traffic. Florence, think of the adventures waiting for us down there. The people we'll meet. The mysteries we may encounter.
I don't want to encounter any mysteries. At my age, I'm perfectly content to have a nice, quiet time sightseeing.
Oh, sightseeing. Really, Florence, you sound just like a retired schoolteacher.
Well, I am a retired schoolteacher, and so are you.
That doesn't mean I have to act like one.
Oh.
As soon as we've changed our clothes, we're going down to Chinatown to have dinner.
Grace, you're forgetting.
Forgetting what?
We promised to go out to New Jersey to see Matilda Smith tonight.
We did. I don't remember doing any such thing. Why, I don't even remember any Matilda Smith.
That's her married name. She used to be Matilda Johnson. She was a pupil of mine the first year I taught school. A thin, unattractive southern girl with just lots of money.
She sounds simply dismal. Why do you want to look her up?
Because of her husband. He used to be a professor. He made several trips to Africa, wrote some very interesting articles about the strange tribal customs he encountered. Now, I'll phone her and tell her we'll be out later. Hello? Operator, I want to make a person-to-person call to Mrs. Matilda Smith in Dobbs Corners, New Jersey. That's it. Yes, I'll wait.
There, that's it. The chairs are all in place. Now the table to hold my notes. Will you help me move it, Matilda, my dear? But be careful of the African knife. It might...
Oh, Maximilian! It almost hit my foot.
I told you to be careful, my dear. I have it. Oh, what a beauty it is. Sharp as a razor. And notice the carvings on the blade. The greatest witch doctor in Africa made this knife.
I don't want to hear about it. And I forbid you to talk about it tonight, do you hear? I forbid you.
But our little gathering tonight is for the express purpose of hearing my talk on the worship of death among the Dambongi savages of Africa. And a very select group it is, the leading grocer and his wife, the owner of the local garage and his wife, Chief of Police Hoffman, all our very best neighbors.
Oh, you can talk about something else. Why do you have to talk about death all the time? Death, death, death. You know how it frightens me to think about
it. But we discussed all that, my dear. And we agreed that the only way to overcome this morbid fear of yours is to face it. Now, what is death?
Oh, please.
It's just a word. No. Nothing to be afraid of. We all must die in time, some of us sooner than others, but there's no need to cower in fear of the inevitable.
Stop.
But, Matilda,
you're just talking this way to torture me. You want me dead. You'd kill me if you dared, but you don't dare. You know the whole world would know the truth.
My love, you're hysterical. You must calm yourself. Remember, we have guests coming in a few hours. Well, I do believe we're going to have a storm, too. Well, it'll just make an appropriate setting for my little lecture. The Dambangi savages, you know, believe that on a stormy night, Death is able to walk abroad to select his next victim.
Expect me if you talk like that anymore.
The phone, Matilda. Hadn't you better answer it?
Yes. Oh, Clarence Murdoch. Oh, Clarence, yes, I do want you to come right away. No, 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 you must come tonight as soon as you can. I want you to protect me. My husband's trying to kill me. He's trying to scare me to death.
Goodness, what a night. Florence, are you sure that Matilda said her husband was trying to kill her?
Of course I'm sure. She said he was trying to scare her to death.
Oh, do you realize that we've read over 1,000 mystery novels, and in none of them has a victim ever been scared to death?
What of it?
Don't you see? It's a brand new murder method. Why, Florence, this may be an adventure. It's much more exciting than a trip to Chinatown.
That's a very callous attitude. I only hope we're in time to help Matilda. Over the telephone, she sounded positively terrified.
Tell me again all you know about her, just in case.
Well, she has lots of money, and she's very stingy with it. A few years ago, she married this professor, a man much younger than herself. Apparently, he married her for her money. Been furious at her ever since because he can't get his hands on it.
Go on.
Oh. Well, anyway, he's very brilliant. He studied witchcraft in Africa, and Matilda is sure he'd kill her if he knew how to get away with it.
Oh, taxi seems to be slowing down. Do you suppose we're actually there at last?
Yes. There's one of those little glass signs on the lawn. Oh. Smith, it says. Oh. But the house is awfully dark. Goodness, I do hope we're in time.
Is anyone home? They're an awful long time answering.
Matilda said the professor was giving a talk tonight to some friends. Maybe they don't hear us.
Yes? Who is it?
Grace and Florence Murdoch. Matilda invited us.
Oh, of course. Come in, come in. We were afraid you weren't coming.
We took the wrong train. We'd have been here hours ago.
Oh, what a pity. Let me take your things. I'll hang them here to dry.
Who is it, Maximilian?
Your friends, my dear. They finally located our humble abode.
Lawrence, it's you. Oh, I was so afraid you weren't coming.
We got lost, Matilda. But how are you? Are you all right?
No, I'm not all right. I'm frightened. Oh, I'm so...
My dear, you must control yourself. I hope you'll understand about Matilda, dear ladies. She hasn't been herself in recent months. She's obsessed with the notion she's going to die.
Don't say it. I forbid you to speak that word.
You see, she has a death phobia. The very word upsets her. And most unfortunately, this evening I was asked to lecture on the worship of death among the Dambangi savages. A fascinating topic. Death to the Dambangis is a living creature. The thunder is the echo of his footsteps.
No, 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 Tim. Make him stop, Lawrence. Make him stop. He's trying to kill me. He's trying to fight, to frighten me into dying.
Matilda, there now, it's all right. Really, it is. Professor Smith, Matilda should be in bed. She needs a sedative.
Just what I told her. Oh. But she insisted on staying up to greet you. Her room is right here. If you could persuade her...
I will. Matilda, come with me. I'm going to put you to bed, do you hear? Then you'll be all right.
Oh, such a pity, my wife's affliction. But I'm sure her old friend will be good for her, Miss Grace. Now, we were in the midst of my little talk. If you care to come into the living room and join us, I'll continue. And now, my friends, having discussed the curious beliefs concerning the subject of death held by these savages, the Dambangi tribe of Central Africa, I'm going to show one of the sacred knives of the tribe. I'll hold it up here. Notice the tremendous blade, razor sharp, and the curious carvings. The Dambangi believe that a knife like this is the house in which death lives, and that such a knife possesses a life of its own, and can seek out and kill a victim with no human hand touching it. That's superstition, of course. But still, strange things do happen in Africa. I'll pass a knife among you for closer inspection. Chief Hoffman, would you care to look at it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Handle it carefully. It could give you a nasty cut. And... Oh, look out.
Oh, dear me,
you dropped it. Well, I have it. No harm done.
Seemed to twist right out of my hand, like it was alive.
The unexpected weight, of course. But perhaps I'd better not pass it around. Someone might be cut. Instead, I'll start the projector and show you the exotic tribal dance in which this knife was dedicated to death.
Grace, where are you?
Here, to the left of the door.
Oh, I couldn't see you. Sit down. How's Matilda? She's asleep. I gave her a tablet. Grace, she's frightened. She swears he'd kill her if he did.
Did you lock her door?
Yes, I turned out the light. And I set the catch so the door locked automatically. Why?
Because this husband of hers is up to something. I don't know what. But all this talk about the death worship of Dambangi savages and the rest of it, it's pure hocus pocus.
You mean it's not true?
Oh, not a word of it. There's no such tribe. Look at that film. It's just an ordinary tribal dance. But he has all these people in here, their neighbors, sitting on the edge of their chairs.
Then he's up to something.
Yes, so we'll just stay here with Matilda tonight. Tomorrow we'll discuss what's to be done. With the door locked, she should be safe enough.
Yes. The window's locked, too, because of the storm. Nobody could possibly get into that room.
There, the dance is over. I'll shut off the projector. Turn up the lights. Now, friends, if anyone...
Oh, what was that?
What was that? What was that? Grace, that was Matilda.
Please, everyone, remain quiet. My wife may have been having a nightmare.
It was no nightmare, Florence.
It was not, Grace. Come on. We must see what's happening.
Please, dear ladies, don't alarm yourselves. Poor Matilda frequently has nightmares.
That doesn't sound like a nightmare to me, Professor.
No, me either. Oh, I forgot I locked your door just now.
I'm sure she's all right. But just to make certain, Matilda. Matilda, my love.
She doesn't answer.
Then perhaps we had better break the door down. Chief Hoffman, if you'll help me.
Yeah, sure.
Then come on. Once. Twice. All right. Now once more. Does it? Now let me find the light switch here.
She's dead. She's lying right in the middle of the bed where I left her. Only now she's dead. With one of those African knives straight through her heart.
This wall is perfectly solid.
Yeah, this one is, too. Well, it beats me. The walls are solid, the windows are locked, and we know the door was locked because we had to break it down.
And still, somebody got in and killed poor Matilda. But how? It's extremely puzzling.
More than puzzling, my dear Miss Murdoch. Impossible. Surely by now it's obvious that at last Matilda could endure her terror no longer and ended it by seeking the very death she feared.
Nonsense.
You mean you don't think so?
Of course not. I've known Matilda since she was a girl. She was always emotional. She certainly wouldn't kill herself.
Florence is quite right.
Nobody who worries so much about dying ever kills himself.
Then, my dear ladies, we have an impossibility. If in this tightly locked room my wife didn't kill herself and wasn't killed, what other answer remains?
I don't know yet.
If we rule out those two possibilities, we're left with a picture of a huge African knife dedicated to death by the mystic spell of an African witch doctor, rising in the darkness, floating through the air, and plunging itself into its victim's heart.
Nah, she killed herself. That's what I say. I stick to it.
Just how did that knife that killed Matilda get in this room? I don't think that's been explained.
I brought back a pair of them from Africa. They're very rare and extremely valuable. One I kept, one I presented to my wife. She kept it in here, on her dresser.
I would hardly expect her to keep something she dreaded so much in a room.
Because of the value of the knife. Matilda, for all her wealth, was extremely close-fisted. Anything valuable she liked to keep close to her.
There's one thing you men are overlooking.
Yeah, Miss Murdoch?
I helped Matilda to bed. I saw her take a sleeping potion just before I turned out the light. Then she couldn't have killed herself. The medicine would have put her to sleep too quickly.
Just what I was trying to point out. Well, Professor, what do you say to that?
What can I say, dear lady? Only what I've said before. Here in this locked room was a knife, animated by the very spirit of death himself. The storm is raging outside. The sleeping spirit in the knife stirs. The knife moved.
Now, this is Dobbs Corner, New Jersey, not Africa. That kind of stuff don't happen here. I say she killed herself. It's the only way it could have happened. And I'm going home. I decided there ain't no case here for the police, and that's that.
Yes, of course, you're right. It couldn't have happened any other way. I'll see you to the door and tell my other guests that they're at liberty to go home. You will all understand that I want to be alone with my grief.
Well, Grace, you wanted adventure tonight. I guess you've gotten it, poor Matilda. That monster murdered her. The least we can do is avenge her by proving it. If he murdered her, I'm sure I don't know how. He was out in the other room talking to us when she died. Yes, he was just turning up the lights when she screamed. Oh, but we must try. There's the knife he was showing us there on the table in the hall. Get it for me, will you?
All right, though I can't imagine why you want it. Here it is.
Now, bring it over here to the bed. There now. Hold the knife close to the one that killed Matilda. I want to make sure they're identical.
Very well, Grace. Grace!
What, Florence?
This knife in my hand. It moved all by itself. Look, I'll show you. I'll hold it close to the first knife like this and... See? It practically jumped to touch the other knife.
That's very strange. Let me try it. You're right. There's a strong and definite attraction between these two knives.
As if there was something living in them. Just like Professor Smith said.
Yes, and I think I know what it is.
Oh, the lights almost went out there.
Yes, lightning struck the wires. But Florence...
Yes, Grace?
I need 10 minutes. Go out and somehow try to keep the professor from interrupting me for that long.
But how?
Oh, how do I know? Use your feminine wiles on him.
I never learned any. That's why I'm an old maid.
Oh, then say to do something, anything. But I need 10 minutes to discover the kind of black magic Professor Smith used to kill Matilda without ever coming nearer.
Grace?
Yes.
Chief Hoffman is just driving away. The others have already left. Professor Smith will be coming back any minute.
Let him come. I'm all ready for him. Help me put this stepladder in the closet.
All right. But what in the world were you doing with the stepladder?
I found it in the hall, and I was using it to practice black magic.
Grace, what on earth are you talking about?
Look around and you'll see what I mean.
Oh. I don't see a thing different. There's poor Matilda's body just as we discovered her. And everything else is the same, too.
Not quite. Florence, look at the knife that killed Matilda. Notice how straight it went into her heart. Why, yes, perfectly straight. And from reading more than 1,000 mystery novels, we know that when anyone strikes a fatal blow, it usually enters at an angle.
Of course it does. And this knife went in as straight as if it had fallen point foremost and...
That's it, Florence. Now you're looking in the right place.
The ceiling! Directly over Matilda's bed. There's a huge knife lying right against the ceiling.
I just finished putting it there.
But what makes it stay there?
Black magic, Florence. Black magic, Professor Smith.
Magic,
you...
my dear Miss Manor. What were you saying about Lee and black magic?
Professor Smith.
I was asking, what were you saying about Lee and black magic? Have you two been disturbing poor Matilda's body?
Grace, I think it's time we were going. Yes, Florence. It's very late and we must be getting back.
Stand still, you two.
Gracie, he's pointing a gun at us.
And it's loaded. Furthermore, I'm an excellent shot.
He'd never shoot two defenseless women.
Since he's just murdered one defenseless woman, Florence, I wouldn't be too sure of that.
I'm tired of this little comedy and of you two busybodies. You'll stand there until I can see what you've done to Matilda's body.
Why are you rolling Matilda's bed out from the wall?
Soon I can stand between it and the wall. Keep an eye on you two while I examine Matilda, my late but unlamented wife. Now we'll see.
Grace, what are we going to do? He may kill us too.
I know.
You got us into this. Now get us out.
Oh, I wish we'd just gone to Chinatown like I wanted.
Never mind wishing. Think of something.
Can't. My mind's frozen. That gun looks so big. Florence, I'm scared.
Maybe we can distract him by talking. Professor?
Yes?
You're not looking in the right place. I suggest you look up at the ceiling.
I don't need to. I'm prepared to admit that you probably guessed my little scheme to rid myself of Matilda.
Oh, it was a clever scheme, but not clever enough.
I think it was. My little talk about witchcraft and black magic and knives that move by themselves confused everyone else so thoroughly, none of them will ever seek for a more rational explanation.
But we know. At least, I think we do.
And you, my dear ladies, are going to be silent as the grave.
Oh!
A nice turn of phrase, isn't it? Silent as the grave?
You're going to kill us?
As soon as the next clap of thunder comes to drown out the noise of the shots.
Oh, no! Why, we have tickets for a round-the-world voyage, and we haven't even started.
You'll not need them, I assure you.
You'll be caught. I never read a mystery yet where the killer wasn't caught.
How different life is from books. You see, there's a pool of quicksand a mile from here in the swamps. Your bodies will go into that pool, and you'll never be found again. Particularly as no one is likely to come looking for you.
Oh, dear. We won't even have a headstone. And I always hated swamps, so... Stop. The lights have gone out.
The lightning hit the wires. I ran for the door. Only I got the wrong door.
You did indeed.
But where's the professor?
There. There on the floor beside Matilda's bed.
With a knife in his back.
Yes, Florence. He's dead, thank goodness.
Tonight, we actually solved a murder. and in a locked room, too. The manner in which we solved this dastardly crime. Grace?
Yes, sir?
I'm writing up our diary.
Yes?
And I want to put down how we solved Matilda's murder. How did we solve it? I'm still a little confused.
Oh, well, in the end, it was quite simple. You see, Florence, for 50 years, you taught history, but I taught physics.
What has that to do with it?
When we were examining those two knives and some strange force drew the two blades together...
Yes, I remember.
I recognized it at once that one of the blades must be magnetized.
Magnetized, of course.
Now, hard steel becomes magnetized when in the field of an electromagnet. So, I reasoned, there was a magnet somewhere in the ceiling. And when we got Chief Huffin to come back, he found it under the floor of the room above, directly over Matilda's bed.
So all Professor Smith had to do was to switch on the electromagnet, then place the knife against the ceiling, and it stuck there?
Exactly. You helped Matilda to bed. Neither of you noticed the knife because the room was lighted only by a small bedside lamp. Then 10 minutes later, in the living room, the professor pretended to switch on the lights. At the same time, he pressed the switch that controlled the electromagnet.
And the knife fell and plunged straight into Matilda's heart. Poor thing. But how did the professor get killed? You kind of slurred over that in telling Chief Hoffman what happened.
Why, in testing the apparatus, I put the second knife against the ceiling, and the electromagnet held it there.
Yes?
Then the professor came in and stood under it while he pointed his gun at us and waited for a flash of lightning.
That was like a bad dream.
But when the lightning came, the flash blinded him. We ducked. The lightning itself struck the wires, cutting off the current and causing the electromagnet to cease working.
So that the knife fell and killed the professor. He was destroyed by his own evil scheme.
Exactly. By his own black magic it killed him. You might even say he was executed by heaven itself.
So Grace and Florence Murdoch are going to London soon. If you happen to be traveling to Europe in the near future and you encounter two elderly maiden ladies with an odd gleam in their eyes, duck, because you may be involved in a murder before you know it. You may even become the victim. Well, that reminds me of my story from next week. A Coffin for Charlie. It's about an Englishman who inherits a coffin, a $1 million coffin, which he... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
I've just heard The Mysterious Traveler, with the title role played by Maurice Tarplin. Others in our cast were Gladys Thornton, Abby Lewis, and Wendell Holmes. Original music composed and played by Al Finelli. All characters in our story were fictitious. Any resemblance to actual persons was purely coincidental. Phil Tonkin speaking. This program came to you from New York.
The Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Want to hear more from the series you heard today? Visit the website Search Forum. You'll also find all the other podcasts at the website, links to everything else Relic Radio. and the donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.